Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're with you all the time online at npr.org/Bryant Park. You know, it is lonely in here, I gotta say. It's much better when other people are around, when Allison's here, when I have my friends and BPP colleagues around. And so I've asked them to come in and help me. We're gonna bring you the most viewed and most emailed stories on the web. It's a little segment we call The Most. That's the most music. That means we get started. That means I'm gonna start with Trisha, you look ready to go.
I am so ready. I have one of the most read stories on USA Today. The headline, AP: drugs show up in Americans' water. So, of course, I clicked on that right away.
Yeah.
It's basically about presence of pharmaceutical stuff in people's drinking water.
Pharmaceutical stuff.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. Concentrations of pharmaceuticals. They're tiny concentrations. They're far below the levels of, like, a medical dose. But, people, I guess what happens is you take a pill, your body uses some of what's in the pill, your body gets rid of some of what's in the pill.
Yeah.
And it ends up in the water system, and it goes through, you know, water treatment plants, and they can't get all of it out. So apparently there's trace levels of all kinds of drugs in our water. So you're thinking, is that going to affect my life? And, you know, apparently there isn't enough to make, you know, to do anything to you, but they're actually concerned. There's some tests showing that it's had effect on wildlife. It's causing some fish to have some strange problems.
But clearly this can't be a new problem. We've been taking drugs for a long time. But are we taking more drugs?
Taking more drugs. I don't have this. This is a really amazing article, chock full of numbers, and I didn't actually circle that number, so I can't tell you how much more we're taking. But we are taking more drugs than ever before. But they're getting concerned about, you know, trace levels in affecting wildlife and affecting humans at the cellular level. So there's some new research that's a little disturbing.
Cellular level. Anytime you say that, that sounds bad.
Like affecting kidneys and affecting, I don't know, there's some stuff that's
funny with stuff like that. Even if, you know, it's not actually affecting us, it's just freaky knowing it's there.
Yeah, it doesn't make me feel good. It makes me want to buy a new Brita. Laura Silver.
Hi.
What do you have to say for yourself?
My story is the number one most emailed at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Mm-hmm. Some parents redshirt their kindergartners.
And what does that mean?
Well, I clicked on it because I didn't know what red shirt meant. And
it's like a technical foul, right? Boy in the room?
No, it's not like a technical foul.
No, I did some research, actually. I have the etymology of this word.
By the way, no, it's not exactly.
What
does it
mean? Okay, the word came into play in 1955 and has to do with the red jersey that players wear when they're scrimmaging to show that they're not actually varsity players.
Oh.
And this has to do with the college varsity players who become like fifth year seniors.
Okay.
Because they sit on the bench for a year. So they're redshirted for a year so they can develop.
You might recruit a really talented quarterback out of high school. But let's say you already have a quarterback who's good and he's a senior. You're going to redshirt that freshman for a year so that
he can keep him on the back burner.
Yeah. And then he'll have an extra year of eligibility on the other end.
Okay. I like it. So
for kindergarten.
So to the gist of the story.
For kindergartners, this means that some parents will hold their kids back a year because they think they might not be ready to start. And in Missouri, the cutoff date for starting kindergarten is age 5 in August, which is kind of early. So Missouri has some of the oldest kindergartners in the country, and I understand we have some examples of redshirting right here.
Well, hey, this is Trisha again. I have a daughter who's approaching kindergarten age.
Yeah.
And she just makes the cutoff in our school district by one day. So if I send her to kindergarten on time, she's going to be the youngest kid in her class by far. And I've really been struggling with,
yeah. You know, is that challenging for her?
Well,
like,
I mean, I think academically she's going
to
be fine. But when I thought she didn't make the cutoff, I came up with all these reasons why it was better for her to be one of the older kids in her class. And then I found out she does make the cutoff. So now I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. Because there are lots of studies that actually show that kids who are older, they're better at the work. And so they get more confidence.
Yeah.
And it has this trickle-down effect for the rest of their school life. But whereas the kids who are youngest, maybe, you know, they're always a little bit behind.
No, by the end of the day, we're going to come up with reasons to justify why it's okay that Cassie's the youngest.
It's going to save me money. I won't have to pay for preschool.
Well, speaking as another mom on the BPP staff, Tommy, my 5-year-old, is in fact the youngest kid in his kindergarten. He has an October 23rd birthday, and so it's freakish in my town to have put him into kindergarten. But he is also a younger brother, and he was all I'm not staying home. I'm going to kindergarten mom.
He's already learned to defend himself.
Yeah, definitely. He's also the tallest. So if anyone says he's behind, he'll beat him up, basically.
Ian, what you got?
Okay, this is number one most popular at the Globe and Mail of Canada. Mm-hmm. And the headline is, "The Twin Otter Flies Again." It's kind of a neat story. The Twin Otter is this really rugged little plane, a little twin-engine prop plane. They stopped producing them in 1988, but pilots just love these things because they're really durable, easy to fly. So last month, CEO of Viking Air announced, look, we're going to make more Twin Otters. We're bringing them back into production. And buyers are just crazy for it. He got interest from Southeast Asia, Africa, India, the Middle East. It's just, I just love the story because it's like, nobody flies props anymore. Nobody makes props anymore. But people just love, it's like bringing back a really great VCR.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. But.
You have one more. Do it really quick because it's funny.
Okay. I'll do it quick by reading just the first
graph.
The headline, this is from the Washington Post, most emailed headline, "When Mom or Dad Asked to Be a Facebook Friend." So the first graph here, when Matt Florian signed onto Facebook, his Facebook account recently, to check the status of his 400-plus friends, he had a friend request. It was from his dad. And the whole article, just horror follows, like, what are these kids going to do?
Okay, folks, we have one more, Sharon?
Yes, we do. I have one of the most emailed from NPR.org. It's a story about Melody Gardot, who is a 23-year-old singer. She sounds a little like Nora Jones to me. She's got a beautiful voice. And 4 years ago, she got into a horrible car accident. She was riding her bike, got hit by an SUV. She was very badly injured, and as part of her therapy to get better, she started singing and playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for her to perform. She suffers short-term memory loss, so she has to write and record songs before she forgets them. But, man, she can sing. And Scott Simon interviewed her for Weekend Edition Saturday. Here's a bit of that story.
You wouldn't ordinarily tell a young person who wants a career in music to get hit by a car, but that's what's happened to Melody Gardot. First, though, some of her music.
Good night, close your eyes and just sleep tight. Lie awake and watch you dream, to be sure what that all of your dreams of you are.
A young woman with that extraordinary sultry voice is now 23. 4 years ago, she was hit by an SUV while riding her bicycle. Her injuries were serious and left her unable to sit up for more than 10 minutes. She had short-term memory loss and acute sensitivity to light and sound. She'd played the piano before the accident, and a doctor told Melody Gardot to use music as a kind of recovery therapy. Since she couldn't sit comfortably at the piano, she picked up a guitar. Now, she's a professional musician with an album out, Worrisome Heart. Melody Gardot joins us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And congratulations. What an achievement this is.
It's quite a surprise. What a turn of events.
Well, help us understand that turn. Where did life find you when you were 19, just before that bicycle ride?
I was in school, and I had no intentions of pursuing music. I was actually more interested in art. So, this bizarre day, my life kind of turned around in the blink of an eye.
Well, and you wouldn't ordinarily say for the better, but something extraordinary just happened to you, didn't it, over these past 4 years?
Yeah. Via the advice of a doctor, I was turned on to music and therapy and the things that it can do. Music is one of the only things that helps to rebuild neural pathways in your brain. So while I was sort of floating about without any progress, he mentioned music therapy as a very viable way to try and regain some of that and just improve on what I had already had. So I started, and it just turned into a completely different process altogether. It went from private to public almost right before my eyes.
Without further ado, let's hear a bit from the title track, Worrisome Heart.
I need a hand with my worrisome heart. I need a hand with my worrisome heart. I could love me the way that I am with this here worrisome heart.
What drew you to this particular kind of music?
Well, honestly, this is sort of coming as second nature. I didn't listen to a great deal of jazz, but when I was taught piano, I was taught classical, and then I got to a point where I started incorporating blue notes by instinct, and my teacher freaked out, and so he introduced me to Ellington, and that was the only real concept of jazz I'd had up until that time, and I don't have the musical background so strongly that I can communicate easily with my fellow peers, like as far as musicians go. So the group of guys that I work with are fundamental in making things actually happen. My way of explaining things is in an art form. So I'm like, you know, go to the next frame. And they're like, you mean the next bar? I'm like, yeah, the next bar.
Love me like the earth itself spins around. Love me like the earth itself, sky above, below the ground. Love me like the earth itself. Baby, don't rush, you'll know what a fall.